Hello, everybody. I hope you're all doing really well. It's Joanna, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you. We've got a really important call today, one that I think is just really, I don't know, for lack of a better word, juicy, not just for your coaching skills, for your work with clients, but for yourself. It's the second part of coaching, the energetics of the coaching relationship, and we're going to get into advanced but also very necessary territory here. Like much of what we look at, or you've heard me say this before, some of this is going to sound simple, and in many ways it is, but at the same time, it has a lot of depth and a lot of layers, and it's just so important. You want to pay attention. So before we get into the kind of meat or the content for today, I want to hear from you. Since we've begun, remember our very, very first call, what we started with, our very first piece of training was about energetics. If you remember back, it was about the container. It was about leveling the playing field. It was about the relationship, right, and looking at the relationship. So since we've started, what have you been noticing about energetics with clients, with your partners, even in your regular relationships? How has what you've been learning or noticing shifting, what's showing up in your coaching sessions, how you're handling your coaching sessions, or in your other relationships? What are you seeing so far has been really important about energetics? Star two, what have you been seeing and noticing, and how has it been impacting either that your actual coaching sessions or any other relationships when it comes to energetics? I'll give you a moment to think on this, but I do want to hear from one or two of you on it. Star two, what's really been standing out in your mind about energetics? What have you been seeing and learning? Siobhan.
Hey. So I don't have anything really specific off the top of my head, just that it makes all the difference in the world. Like if I'm checking my filters and I'm, you know, doing all the things that we've learned about and really bringing what I refer to as the right energetics, it just makes all the difference in the world. I can't even say specifically why, just that it's an energetic thing, right?
Yeah, and what are, like, when you say it makes all the difference in the world, tell us, like, you know, even just one thing, like, what kind of difference are you seeing?
So if I show up fearful or, you know, something like that, or, you know, my self-esteem is not good for whatever reason, I'm feeling triggered in some way, the session just doesn't go well. It just,
yeah,
they pick right up on it. Like,
yeah,
I lead with my energy, and even if they're in a bad place, as long as I'm okay, by the end of the session, you know, we've made progress and they're feeling good about the session.
Beautiful. Good. Yeah, it's thank you for articulating that a little bit more. It's like, you know, whatever questions you ask in a session, it's great, you know, creating awareness, all of that, but it really, if the energetics aren't right, it's not going to go as well. And really the awareness that you create, the questions that you ask, anything else that you do, it's stemming from the energetics, how you are showing
up.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good. So as Siobhan just said, and you know, we've looked at this in many ways already, but I just really want to reiterate, whether it's for a 10-minute laser coaching session or whether it's for an ongoing client over years and years and years and years, the relationship between you and your client is the basis of everything. It's the most foundational piece. And, of course, part of your relationship with your client is your relationship with yourself, your energy, how you're showing up. When the relationship is out of alignment and the energetics aren't tended to, then, as you know, we've seen, we've spoken about, there's a leaky container. Frustration can happen, disengagement, worry, stuckness. When the relationship is aligned and the energetics of the relationship are tended to, then there's much, much more of a chance for there to be more trust between you and your client, more vulnerability, more excitement, more motivation, more depth. I'm going to say something next, and I want you to really take it in. What happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the coaching container in the real world. I'm going to say that again, and then I'm going to explain a little bit more what I mean, but I want you to write this down. What happens in the coaching container and in the relationship with the client, essentially, right? So what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what is happening outside of the coaching container in the real world. Okay, so what does this mean? What am I talking about here? Well, if in your coaching relationship with a client, in the container, she shows up as unsure of herself, you can pretty much bet that out in the world, she's showing up in one way or another as unsure of herself as well. If in the coaching container, if in the relationship, your client tends to get angry at you easily, for example, you can pretty much bet that outside of the container, there's some kind of anger stuff going on. If inside the container, in the relationship, your client tends to compare himself with you or compare himself with other of your clients that he may have come in contact with or whatever it is, you can pretty much bet that outside of the container, there's comparison issues and dynamics going on. If inside the coaching container, the coaching relationship, a client has unrealistic expectations for themselves and for what they're able to achieve, then most likely, same in the real world. There's going to be, unrealistic expectations outside of even what you're talking about in your coaching relationship. If the client is hard on herself during coaching sessions, you can pretty much bet that she's hard on herself outside of coaching sessions. So what happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what happens out of the coaching container in the real world. And even more to the point, if you as the practitioner leave things to chance or inertia, in other words, if you don't take the lead, then there's a good chance that at some point in the coaching relationship, your client is going to unconsciously bring her own family dynamics and patterns into the relationship. Unconsciously bring her own family dynamics and patterns into the relationship. Again, because whatever is happening in the container is happening out of the container. Now, no matter what, your client is going to bring her own family dynamics and patterns into the relationship with you. That I can just tell you off the bat, like, no matter what, it's going to happen. But the more conscious that your client can be about bringing them in, the more conscious that you as the practitioner are about your client bringing them in, then the more that together you can use what the client brings into the relationship, into the container for her growth, for her transformation, as fuel to move her towards her goals, instead of those unconscious family patterns and family dynamics working against her and you in the container. So, in other words, one of the important components of the energetics of the coaching relationship, really any relationship, to be honest, is that you as the practitioner want to be aware if your client is projecting mother, father, parent, or sister, or brother onto you. You want to be aware if the client is projecting any of those family dynamics onto you. Again, there's nothing wrong if this happens. It's normal and natural for it to happen. But the more aware that you are, then the better you're going to be able to handle it and use it for growth. When a client brings these projections to the relationship, again, it doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong as the coach. It's natural. And it's especially if you've created a safe space or, you know, if it's like a long-term client, sometimes it's even more likely to happen if it's super safe or long-term, longer relationship. And that's because of the sense of comfort. Once people get more comfortable, you know, they tend to bring some of those old dynamics in a way. That doesn't mean that it can't happen with a new client. It can, but oftentimes it's like because you've done a good job, because you've created a sense of safety, because you've created a sense of comfort, those kind of unconscious projections can come in. And by the way, the coaching relationship isn't the only place that this can happen, right? For any of you, for example, that have been, let's say, in a long-term or not even long-term or just a romantic relationship, right? You know it's so easy for people in romantic relationships to project parent or sibling or, you know, whatever it is, right? Savior, whatever it is, onto the other person in the relationship. What's important is how you handle it. If you, as the coach, don't do anything or don't even realize that it's happening, it has the potential to eat away at the coaching relationship and to undermine the client's progress. But if you as the practitioner can leverage what's happening, if you know how to address it in ways that the client can really start to understand more about themselves and their habits and their patterns, then it actually becomes like pure gold for your client. So I want to just give you, I already gave you some examples, but I want to give you some more examples of what it might sound like, even if these exact words aren't used, but it's almost like a feeling that you as the practitioner are going to get if a client is bringing some of their family dynamics or projections into the container and into the relationship with you. So again, sometimes these will come out as the actual words spoken by the client. But sometimes it's more you're going to get the energetic feeling based on how they're showing up and then how they're talking around it. So examples are you're going to judge me, right? If a client, for example, in their family life has felt very judged by a parent, or by a sibling, or even in their adult life by a partner, or business partner, or whatever it is, if that's unchecked, it can unconsciously be projected onto you, right, that they're scared that you as a practitioner are going to judge them. You don't love me is a big one, right? Like if I tell you this, you're not going to love me, or you just don't love me as I am, right? If that's something that they've experienced in their family in one way or another, or another major relationship in their life, they may be projecting that onto you, right? You're not going to love me, or you're not going to love me as much as you love her. So if they felt like a sibling was loved more than them, what they may bring into the coaching container is you like your other clients more than you like me, or you respect your other clients more than you respect me. You're making me do this. This is another one, right? If somewhere along the line your client, you know, was in a, kind of like a habituated pattern of feeling like maybe their parents are making them do schoolwork or making them become a doctor or making them marry a certain person or look a certain way or whatever it is, if that's a pattern, that's something that they may unconsciously bring into the relationship with you as the coach, as the practitioner. You're making me work on my business. You're making me do video. I get that sometimes. You're making me do video. I'm not making you do anything, right? Another one is you'll punish me if I don't get this right, right? Again, if that's part of something they've experienced in a habituated way and, you know, they've internalized it, they may bring that and project that onto you. You, my coach, you're going to punish me if I don't get this right. You don't approve of me. You don't think I'm amazing enough. Here's another one. You're going to betray me, right? Or another way that that might take root is you won't really be there for me if I need you. Now, again, very rarely is a client going to say, I'm scared you're going to betray me, or I think you're not really going to be there for me when I need you, right? But if a client has experienced that in the past, and again, usually it's a family thing, a parent, a sibling, something like that, they may be unconsciously projecting that onto you, right? You want to be able to catch these things because hopefully already you can see, like, without catching them, they can really stop the coaching process in its tracks or really stymie it. Another example is you need to save me or I need to save you, right? Sometimes you'll come across a client who, like, they're caretaking you, you know, oh, is it, you know, I know that you weren't feeling well this week. Are you sure it's okay to have the session? You know, like asking over and over. It's very nice when clients know that I've been sick and they, you know, and they ask if it's okay. That's great. But you sometimes you'll have a client that's like over caretaking you, right? Well, you want to note that. That's not just like, oh, a weird, funny thing that they're doing just with you. Mm-mm. That's coming probably from feeling like they have to take over responsibility in their family lives or whatever it is, right? And then sometimes that can be flipped, right? Are they projecting savior onto you? You need to save me. I can't do it on my own. Again, that's coming from somewhere else. There's so much that, you know, hopefully you're starting to see. Also, like, there's so much that we can learn about our clients and awareness that we can help create for our clients based on just what's happening in their relationship with us in the container. Another example of a projection or a dynamic is you're trying to control me, right? That's kind of similar to the you're making me do this. You'll get angry at me. You're pushing me too much. Here's another one. You don't really understand me. Again, they're not probably going to say those exact words, right? But sometimes I'm working with a client and I get this sense that, like, she just, you might feel like, I just don't get her. I just don't get her. And when we look further into it, you know, she feels misunderstood by everybody around her. It's like she never really got the validation, the seeing, the mirroring, you know, from the important people around her, and she feels misunderstood, right? You don't really believe in me. You don't really believe in my strengths. You don't really believe in my visions. You're not paying enough attention to me. Right? Like, oh, you're so busy, coach, practitioner, you know, I need more of you. You're not paying enough attention to me. Sometimes I'll feel really strongly a client might be bringing in that you're better than me, right? Like, almost like they're bowing down to, like, oh my gosh, your business is so much better. You're so much of a better coach. Like, all those things, right? Like, that needs to be addressed, and also that's a pattern, that's a dynamic, that's not just happening in the coaching relationship. If a client is scared that they're annoying you too much, or they feel like they're always talking too much, or even sometimes it can be a simple, like, you just don't like me, right? The client is scared that you actually just don't like who they are as a person. So there are other examples of projections and dynamics, but hopefully you're starting to get the picture on this. All right. We are a little bit later in the call going to be looking at how to handle projections and dynamics and what to do. But before we get there, as always, I want to do some inner work around this. I'm going to ask you some journaling questions. First question, what are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you have or have had with your parents? And if it's helpful to divide it into, if you have had two parents, to divide it, you know, look at each one separately. I recommend that you do that. And also primary caretaker, right? If you've had someone who you don't consider a parent, but they've been a caretaker, right? So take some time on this one. What are some negative dynamics or patterns that you have or have had with your parents or primary caretakers? Look at each one separately if there's more than one. Might be some of the ones I already mentioned, right? You feel like they're already judging. They're always judging you. You feel like they don't love you, or they don't love you as much as they love a sibling. They're making you do this, right? So it could be one of the things I've already mentioned. Maybe you don't feel safe with them. Maybe you feel like they're always overpowering you, trying to get you to do something, right? So think on that. Give you a few minutes on it. take another moment. Right, next question. What are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you have or have had with your own siblings, if you've had a sibling, or any stand-in for a sibling, a cousin or a really, really close family friend, maybe growing up, or even a very close friend now that you have as an adult? Right, so what are some of the negative dynamics or patterns that you've had with your own siblings or stand-ins for them? Next question. When you have been a client, right? So if you've had a coach, if you've been the client, how have you brought any of these family dynamics or patterns or projections into the relationship, right? So any of the things that you've noted so far in the first few questions, when you've been a client, and it doesn't even have to be just with a coach, it can be with any kind of practitioner, really, or even any relationship in your life. How have you brought your family dynamics or patterns or projections into the relationship? As a client. I know for me, a lot of times when I work with mentors, I have had to work really hard not to bring, as the client, not to bring in a kind of projection onto them that they don't think that I'm good enough or smart enough or really know what I'm doing. Maybe for you, it's, you know, worrying that you're too much, you're going to be too much to handle or whatever it is, right? But when you're the client, how have you brought some of your stuff in to the container? And then for those of you that have clients, how have your clients, think about your clients, how have they brought some of their dynamics to the relationship with you? Or you can also think about this with any team members, anyone you've ever worked with, romantic partners or anything like that, right? So think about a relationship. If you've got clients, think about your clients. If not, just think about any other relationship. How has the other person, as you're looking, like really brought in and their family dynamics or patterns and projected it onto your relationship, projected it onto you. Okay, let's pause here for a moment. I'd love to hear what you're seeing so far, what's coming through so far. Star two. Show.
Oh, hey. I was already. this is something that I'm working on a lot, and it seems to continue to, you know, crop up. And that is things from my parents. One, for sure, my father, I was not good enough, did not treat us siblings equally, really showed up when he passed away, still working on the will stuff, like what he left other, you know. So that was really, like, dragged up a lot of other stuff, right? That it was, like, kind of confirmed. Like, if you ever thought, like, he had favorites, it showed up. Like, and then it was like, this is really the evidence of it.
Yeah. So good to be aware of that. I mean, in general, to work through it, right? But also to see how it shows up in other relationships. Right? Or when you're in groups with other people, you know, how is it, do you think someone's playing favorites and not picking you, and right? Like all of those pieces.
Yeah. And even that does happen. I mean, people tend to pick people that, for whatever reason. I was aware before he was going to die, I was aware that this would be an issue coming up. And so that, I mean, I worked on this with David a lot. Before, so when it happened, it was like I predicted, and it was like saying to my siblings, "Look, this, and this." But in any event, with my mom, she is borderline personality disorder, narcissistic. So she like extremely destructive, and either you're worshiping her or doing stuff for her, or she rejects you, like you're like nothing, like you're, and she will like try to destroy you. Like, so that's her. It's interesting. So with my siblings, I was a rescuer. I can say I was.
Yeah.
especially with my sister,
rescuer.
Also. I'm a big rescuer.
Yeah. Hmm? So it's like we wanna, and clearly you've done a lot of work. On yourself, there's always more work to be done. But we also, one of the reasons why I ask and we look at this way is because we also, the more that we're like aware of these different types of things, the more that we can also spot them when we're working with our clients. And like I said, you know, a projection, a lot of times it's like the person hasn't actually said the thing. Sometimes they will, but it's like it's a feeling that we get inside, like, oh, there's this energy here. There's other energy playing out in this relationship, right? So it's just so good for us to become aware of our own stuff, not only for ourselves, but then we can become better and better at seeing where it's showing up in those clients, you know, where our clients are bringing
And I can feel like somebody, it's like I can definitely, and I don't know if I said this before, like, even my patients I had for a long time, that they were talking about something, and then I'm like, "You're like ex-husband or that sibling? Are they like bipolar? Like border? Like are they have a like an ill like something like that?" And they go, "Yes, oh my God, yes." And it was like whatever our connection was, there was some like kind of like. And I don't know what I would call it, like trauma buddies kind of thing, but maybe,
there's a dance.
Could read them.
There's a dance that can happen sometimes for sure. Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then I can say as a client, I notice that I will jump into the, you know, maybe I'm not making enough progress. I'm not getting it. I'm not being the good, you know, client, And that I can see in disappointment. And I see that, you know, coming from.
Yeah, I've had that as a coach before, like once or twice. I've had a client say to me, I'm scared you're going to drop me because I'm not making fast enough progress, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's, we want to pay attention when those pieces come up, because that's not, obviously we always want to check ourselves first to make sure it's not coming from us. We know, when we know it's not, it really is such a nugget to, that we can use to help the client with. Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for all
of
that, too. Let's see, who's this? From Orlando, 0700.
It's actually Michelle, and unfortunately, I'm in Chicago, where it's a little chillier.
Oh, good to hear your voice.
Thank you. And I'm not sure if this is the right place for this question or not, but one of the things that I'm sort of struggling with around this, when you talked about, you know, the need to save, the need to fix, somebody being better, a lot of people that I'm working with, we're doing coaching/consulting, and I'm sort of feeling like there's almost a blur here for me. If they're coming to me and asking me, how do I fix this, do this? Well, then it's something that I might be better at, but I'm not feeling like I'm better at. But then there comes into that savior part as well. And I think I'm just a little, I'm struggling right now with that. And maybe I'm jumping ahead and you'll go over it later, but not a filter, but a role, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yes, I'm glad you're bringing it up. So we'll definitely get in more like how to handle it. And if you have specific questions about specific clients, definitely ask. But what I'll say for now is, I think it's about when we're consulting, there are certain things that we know better than our clients. But there's a difference between let me tell you, what I see is next here, or here are the ways, or whatever it is, when we're in consulting mode, there's a difference between that and the client saying, oh my God, I just can't do this. Can you do this for me? You need to fix this. Or like sending an email last minute before a presentation, I didn't work on it. I know I didn't respond to your emails about how it's going until right now. Can you help me right now with this?
Okay.
I think there's a line between, this is appropriate consultant mode now versus you need to fix this for me, or I can't survive unless you fix this or save this for
okay.
me. Is that helpful to think about?
It was, thank you, and it brought up a couple of other things that I'll work on. But thank you for sharing that. It was helpful.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question. Stephanie.
Hey, Joanna.
Hey.
Hey. So, a couple of things that came up for me thinking about my work, like as a client with coaches that I've hired, is often feeling annoyance and feeling like they're not there for me or not doing enough for me. And I hadn't really connected that with this general sense of just not really feeling supported by my parents, like emotionally or in other ways. There's this interesting thing that it's like, I get annoyed that other people I perceive as like not doing enough for me. Yet at the same time, feeling like I'm being annoyed if I ask for things, which is also something that can connect to parental and sibling relationships of being sort of labeled as annoying as a young child.
Yes. Well, also, that's what you're describing, those kind of two poles, has a lot to do with shadow. So we're also, when you're at the shadow retreat, we can go deeper with some of that. But this awareness, I can feel even as you're sharing, you can see how important it is, right? Because if you're coming in unconsciously to a relationship with somebody that you've hired to be your coach or to support you or to help you, but there's this kind of underlying thing of nobody is ever really going to be able to help me or see me enough or do enough for me, then there's gonna, that's the feeling, you know, that you're gonna have in the container. You're not gonna, you'll probably get to do good work, but not the best work that you can do, and you're gonna feel annoying, like you're annoying them. Yeah, so I'm glad you can see this for yourself, and also, again, it's great to get all these different examples, the easier we can spot it for clients, too, that are unaware.
Yeah, and I feel like it also seeps into my role as a coach, too, that often I find I stop my questioning earlier than maybe I'd like to because I don't want to pester them with questions.
That's so. Where we're going to go next, is how we project onto our clients. So, yeah, we're going to get there in a minute. Good. I'm glad you can see all of that. Hold on. I feel like there was just another hand raised and it went down. Okay, anyone else? Star two before we continue. Susie.
Hi. For me, it's safety, and I've seen this go both ways, a feeling of this person won't be able to keep me safe if I go, like, and really become vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then I find myself thinking that about clients also.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's it's a great segue. You're going there, and Stephanie did too, of what the point I wanted to make next, which is that we also bring, as practitioners, if it's unchecked, we can bring our own family dynamics into the container with clients. So I'm glad you can see that, and we're gonna look more at that in a minute. But the safety one, I'm glad you're bringing it up because, again, like it, this is another common one. It's great to be able to notice it if a client is bringing that in for us too, or if we're projecting it. So thanks for bringing that forward. Christine.
Hi. For me, the interesting thing is, you know, for all the three questions, the thread in it is judgment. So feeling judged by my mother, but also bringing in the judgment. So kind of like trying to make sure that I'm all righteous and good and no, I'm not going to judge you. This is a non-judgmental place, but then feeling, you know, checking that the person's not judging me. You know, so that it's funny. I didn't realize it, but it's so strong in all the questions. And then the other thing, of course, the safety, but seeking approval so much so that it affects my pricing because, you know, I've been seeking approval from my mother, therefore seeking approval with my clients. And if I'm not going to charge them as much as I think, you know, then I'm not going to get their approval. So this is a big aha for me.
Yeah, it's I'm so glad you're bringing it forward. And this seeking approval is a big thing that we as practitioners, we need to check. Like you're saying, it affects our rates, but it affects the container with the client.
Yeah.
Right? So this isn't about eliminating the need for approval, but it is about checking.
Okay.
It's really important.
Yeah, no, thank you. That was helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, well, you guys are all naturally going to where I wanted to look next. So I'm going to say it again. It's not just clients that can unconsciously bring their projections and family dynamics into the relationship, the energetics of the coaching relationship, but at coaches, practitioners do it too. And again, this isn't about, like I was just sharing with Christine, this isn't like you have to get rid of all of your family dynamics before working with people. No. I mean, that's, you know, I think that's probably nearly impossible. I share for myself. I've got tons of issues, right? But it's like how much, you know, we want to check them, right? So let me ask you, if you haven't already gone there, as a coach or a practitioner, and if you don't have clients, just think about your partner coaching, right? What are your own family patterns and dynamics that you bring to the relationship? So, you know, and I'll just give you, we've already had some great examples from the people that have shared, but I'll give you some more. Like, for me, and it took me a good, it wasn't like until my second year of coaching until I checked this one. I didn't even realize, but, you know, one of the ones for me was, in the family that I grew up in, my mother, you know, one of the kind of things was, you know, unless you're in constant contact with me, unless we talk every day, unless I feel like you're constantly seeing me, then you don't love me, right? That was the messaging I always got from my mother, is like, you know, and she was sick on top of that, so that was messaging was even more extreme in a way. It was like, I'm literally going to die if you're not in constant contact with me, right? And I kind of knew this, but I didn't know I was bringing it into my coaching relationships. You know, as the coach, I was bringing it into my relationships. How was I bringing it to my client relationships? Well, I would have sessions with clients. We would meet, you know, every other week or whatever it was, sometimes even every week. But I would be checking in with them all the time in between sessions. And if I didn't hear from them via email all the time in between sessions, I would think they're not doing their work. They don't like the work that they're doing with me. They've fallen off the way, you know, like all the things, right? They must hate me. You know, and hate the work with me because I'm not hearing from them in between our sessions. You know, it was almost like if I'm not awesome every second and in contact with you every second, then you don't, then I'm not good enough coach, right? So that's the messaging I got from my mother, right? It was such a revelation to finally, a couple of years into my coaching, see that and realize what I was projecting into the container, and oh my God, what a relief it was to see it, because then I had choice to not do it anymore. So much better for me and my stress level, so much better for my clients. That doesn't mean that I don't get in touch with people if I feel like, I wonder what they're up to. I haven't heard from them for a while. They said they were going to do something and it was a stretch and I don't know if they did, right? Of course I email them. I get in touch with them. I'm that kind of coach. I like to hold. I like to track. But now it's in an aligned way, right? So for you, what are, when you show up as the practitioner, what are some of the things that you can see you're bringing that are unchecked family projections? I'll share also just another one in case it's at play for you guys. That I checked, it took me a while to check myself on. I had been bringing this fear for quite some time, I didn't even realize it, into containers that I was going to somehow like show up. My client was going to think that my ego was too big. Like I was gonna, I was always scared that they were gonna think that I was outdoing them in some way. That 100% that fear came from other things that had nothing to do with my client relationship. So how are you bringing this into your coaching containers as the coach? And also, if you've had a coach or any kind of practitioner that you've worked with, you know, as you look back now, what do you see maybe the practitioner was bringing in an unchecked way that really affected your container? What was the practitioner bringing in to the container that was unchecked that really affected your container, impacted your container? So let's pause here for a moment. I'd love to hear some more shares. Start to, what are you seeing? Anne.
Hi.
Hey.
It isn't as clearly articulated as I want it to be. I know that for myself, I sometimes struggle in client relationship with appropriate boundaries around who is responsible for what. So if I have a client who isn't doing their homework, isn't maintaining their accountabilities per our agreements, there have been times when my unchecked family stuff of like everything reflects on mom. And if you do something wrong, it means mom was a bad mom and you embarrassed her, and then she takes everything over, right? Whether you want her to or not. So so I struggle with knowing when to kind of stand firm in my boundaries and hold my client to account for, okay, like you said you would do this thing, and we can look at what's going on for you that you didn't do this thing. But I'm not going to take the heat for you not doing this thing. Like, because I've also had people in my professional history who have mentored me who have said, no, as a practitioner, you are always 100% responsible for whatever your client does or doesn't do. And I, frankly, I think that's bullshit. Now, I didn't know it then because, of course, it plugged right into.
Right, it fed right into that family code. Yeah.
And I've also had relationships where I've been the client and it's kind of gone maybe too far the other way. The client is always 100% responsible, and if something in my life blew up, like when my dad had his rollover accident and became brain injured and I suddenly became a caregiver when he was supposed to be moving down to help me, right? And it was like, well, you know, you just have to be responsible for rearranging your life so you can still get everything done. It was like, wait, like something literally just crashed.
Yeah, major.
And I
right.
need some understanding and some compassion that this is not a reality. I know how to just, you know, turn on a dime and say, well, that's fine. I'm accountable for all of it. And so I still struggle a lot with striking the right balance with the boundaries and the balance of responsibility between practitioner and client, no matter which side of that line I'm on.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that you're bringing this forward. I don't think it, I think it's common. I don't, you know, I've heard it before for sure. And I'm going to ask you, because I actually think you, I think you have an answer for yourself.
Okay.
So, What's some wisdom around holding the boundary and knowing who's responsible for what?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of the sentence.
What wisdom do you have around knowing who's responsible for what and what the boundaries are?
So what's there is what I want to be true, and I don't know if it is, which also plugs into mom stuff of somebody else always has the right answers and the parameters and gets to say, being upfront with that. I don't think that it's always just, you know, straight up 50-50. I think there is some fluidity in that. In as practitioners, we're responsible for holding the container and for setting the parameters. And I want it to be true that our clients, when they agree to those parameters, are then responsible for that part of it. And then there's that little fluid piece in the middle of, you know, like I said before, if they're struggling with something, creating an opportunity to dive a little deeper and see what is it that would have you not honor this agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And to, in part, to help the client, but also for my own sanity, that I also get to say, if after having been given an opportunity to look at this, you're still not willing to be accountable for what you said you would do in this relationship, then this may not be the time to work together on this, or I may not be the person that you want to work with.
Yeah.
Because there's something in the way that you have to be able to pick up and put your arms around.
And
I can't do that for you. And I just, like, I don't know if that's actually allowed.
Why wouldn't it be?
Because mom said. I mean.
Right, exactly. Exactly, right? So,
right.
Yeah, but
because everything is always my accountability in the end, and if I didn't set the parameters up right in the beginning, if they can't follow it, I clearly messed up somewhere along the way.
Right. So that's,
you know, that,
so that's what I want you to be checking more closely, Anne. Because when you check that, then the wisdom is there, right? And and then, 100%, it's maybe this isn't the right time, maybe I'm not the right person, or maybe we need to revision and push this vision out by a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to re-strategize. And then also sometimes it's like, right, because that speaks to parameters. We can always reset parameters based on what comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And then every now and again, also, you know, I will say to a client, is there something more that I can be doing here or that you would like for me to? Now, that doesn't mean that I have to agree to it, right? But let's have the discussion, right? And sometimes a client will say, you know, I just, like, I really need you to hold my hand over the next 2 weeks. Would you be willing for me to leave you, you know, a Voxer, you know, every other day or whatever? Now, normally I wouldn't take that many voice to voice from a client, but maybe for that period of time I am willing to take that responsibility on, right, as a practitioner. It's a moving, changing, like you said, it's fluid. It's not, it doesn't have to be one thing, but what's important is that awareness is made around all of it, conversations are happening, and everybody's checking their projection.
Yeah, I think I have it that like that it's never okay. That's the word I'm looking for. Like somehow it's never, it's not the same thing as giving up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't give up on clients, but on rare occasions I have been known to say the only way we can move forward is if you're going to do the work. And if you aren't going to do the work, this is a waste of both of our time and your money.
Yeah.
And I try to do that in a way that is honoring.
Yes,
that they don't
course,
feel abandoned, but that's their stuff too, right?
Yeah.
And but I have it like that's never okay to do.
Yeah.
That
so
that's
we wanna,
like,
I think
a
you're
horrifying
bringing,
failure.
Right. So I think that you're bringing this forward because there's a big part of you that knows that it is okay to do in the appropriate situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because your family, because you've shared like your family dynamics, like I'm hesitant to give you permission, right? Because I don't want to play it back in, but I do want to give you permission. Like, yes, it is appropriate in some situations to do that.
And on the flip side of that, when a client has major stuff going on, like I got a call from a client this morning saying, oh, my God, I got these legal papers in the mail, and I am in a swirl, and I don't know if we should do our call tomorrow. Right. And I said, you know what? If you feel up to making the call tomorrow, let's try it. And if it doesn't look like it's working, then we'll just reschedule. But see how you feel in 24 hours. And you have my permission, like, not to do your homework today.
Yeah.
Because, for real, there's other stuff going on. And there's also been that context of it's never okay to let somebody off the hook.
Right. So, see, you're leaning in all the right directions, Anne.
Okay.
You're checking your stuff.
Yeah.
You're creating awareness. You're being reasonable, but you're not letting yourself be a doormat, right? So
the instinct for balance and the instinct for letting
the balance
it shift a little
is
in the middle
change.
Is okay.
Exactly, and the balance isn't going to look the same in every situation. It's going to shift client to client and even situation to situation with each client.
Yeah.
Good.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad you brought that forward. Okay. All right, good. So let's keep on going. So now that we're seeing, hopefully all of you are seeing different pieces here, and then the next question is, okay, so what do we do? Well, we've already started talking about this a little bit, but let's really kind of dig into that now. So number one, manage your own projections as the practitioner, right? I'm going to speak mostly today on what to do when a client brings their stuff in, but I don't want to neglect saying, you know, now hopefully if you haven't been aware up until today's class, hopefully now you are aware. If you were aware of your projections before today's class, this is kind of like an underlining it so that you'll be more aware and so that you can check them, right? Again, it's not about just getting rid of them completely, you know, by your next client session. That's not realistic. I still notice in myself sometimes like the client hasn't been in touch, you know, are they okay? Are they really in it? Are they in the container, right? It still comes up for me, but before I act on it, I'm checking myself first. I'm connecting the dots between that thought and the awareness that I have around my dynamics and my projections. And then from there, I'm making a decision on whether or not to get in touch. Right? So awareness is huge as we look at in every one of our calls, right? Awareness, just to be aware of all of it, right? So for yourself and then for your clients too, one of the first things that, you know, the most important thing is for you to be aware of human behavior, for you to be aware of these ideas that we looked at today, that clients are going to bring those dynamics to you, right? So that way, first of all, you don't have to panic. You know that it's normal. Just that awareness alone of understanding what's going on, not panicking, knowing it's normal, that's huge. It will help you be grounded and know where to go next. Also, when you're aware of all of this, right, that this is just human behavior, that this happens in relationships, then you can also know as a practitioner, it's not about you, right? When a client gets angry at me, clients don't generally get angry at me, right? But like if they do, there's a 99% chance that it's not about me. There's a 1% chance that maybe I have really done something that there is the cause to be angry. I don't know, maybe 2% chance, but right? But like, it's so important to know that it's not about you. When a client feels, you know, earlier today actually I had a conversation with a client and I point blank asked her, so we she's somewhat of a new client, and we've had some sessions, and I've kind of said, you know, ask for my support if you need it. And she hasn't, I could tell she hasn't fully called on me for the help that she really needs with some of her marketing. And I said to her, you know, on a call today, I want you to be really honest. What is it about me or this relationship that has you feel like you can't ask for help? I said to her, like, I can take whatever you're going to say, and I'm not asking this question for me. I'm asking this question for you. What is it? What's going on here? We had already established that this happens in other places, not just in our relationship. And she paused, you know, and I didn't know what she was going to say. I thought maybe she'd say, I don't think you're trustworthy, Joanna, or it's not, you know, I didn't know what she was going to say. She paused and she said, I'm scared if I share these pieces with you, then you're going to think that I am a fraud. And so I'm just not sharing my marketing as it's in process with you. Why am I telling you guys this story? I just lost the thread of what I was saying. Wait, hold on a second here. Oh, it's not about me, right? It was not about me. There was nothing in our relationship up until that point that I had done. And I checked myself for a moment. I asked, right? It wasn't a foregone conclusion that it wasn't about me. I checked it, but there was nothing in our relationship up until that point that I had done energetics that would actually make this client think that I would think she was a fraud, right? It was not about me. It was about stuff outside of our container that she was bringing in unconsciously that was kind of putting up obstacles to our work, right? So one of the points that I'm trying to make here is that whatever a client brings to you is rarely going to have anything really to do with you. Why is this important for you as a practitioner to know? Because then you don't take it personally. And when you don't take it personally, your energetics are much cleaner. You're in a much better position to not be scared, to not be worried, to not think you've done anything, you know, all of the things. So you're in a much better position to support your clients. Okay, so just you as the practitioner being aware of all of these things, just that alone is going to help so much. But from there, there are other places you can go with this. Reflecting the truth is one of them, right? Back to our creating awareness module. So you as a practitioner may be aware, but you want to support your client to be aware of what they're bringing in also. So one way you can create awareness is by asking some breakthrough questions, right? Like the story I just told you about this client. I didn't say, you're bringing family projections in and blah, 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 right? Like I asked the question. I didn't really know what the projection exactly was. My guess was not what she ended up saying, right? So in that situation, it was good that I really asked that more open-ended question. But you can also reflect the truth in the ways that we looked at in the creating awareness module. So, for example, you may say to a client something like, you know, sometimes we can bring our family or our early life patterns into the coaching relationship. It's totally normal. And when we do it, it means that we feel safe enough in the coaching relationship. I'm sensing that sometimes you worry that I don't approve of you, and you put a lot of energy into that worry, which, by the way, is so far from the truth. But I wonder if this resonates for you, and if so, what relationship in your life does it remind you of? Right? So in that reflection and then question, the practitioner would have noticed that the client is doing worrying that she's not being approved of, right? And so you're just creating awareness. Now, you know, and I'll just say, like, this takes some courage, right? Like, it always takes courage to reflect the truth, create awareness, but even more so when the truth that you're reflecting is about the relationship at hand, right? Even though you don't have anything to do with it, you do, because you're the one that it's being projected onto. It takes courage, you know, to say something like, I'm sensing that sometimes you worry that I don't approve of you, or I have this sense that you don't always feel safe in the conversation, or, you know, I could be wrong, but I feel like you don't often allow yourself to be as vulnerable as you could be here in our conversations, right? That takes courage from you as the practitioner, more so than just pointing out some kind of pattern that has nothing to do with the container. But it can be so helpful and so healing and open up so much. Now, remember back from reflecting the truth, it's always done with you don't know the truth with a capital T. You're checking it out with your client. You know, that your client knows best. Here's another example of reflecting the truth when it comes to the relationship in the container. This one is more direct, right? So, and I've done this a couple of times. And it has to be in the right situation and with the right person, and you need to know that there's a relationship that's established there. But, you know, for example, if I sense that a client is really projecting some icky stuff from their mother onto me, if I'm going to go that more bold and direct route, if I know the client can handle it, and if I sense that the direct route is going to, like, really create a breakthrough, I might say something like, Stacy, I'm not your mother. This is actually something I once said to a client. Her name wasn't actually Stacy, but, you, Stacy, I'm not your mother. I'm not going to forget about you because I'm taking a month off, right, to say that clearly. And then leave a space for the client to respond. That can oftentimes happen, this particular projection, like if you're taking time off. This happened also with both of my pregnancies when I was taking time off. You know, a client might be scared that you're going to leave them or abandon them or forget about them or, you know, whatever it is. So I want to repeat what I said before. What happens in the coaching container is a microcosm of what's happening out of the container in the real world. If you agree with this statement, if this statement is true, then what's also true is that if you, the practitioner, directs things in effective ways, then the coaching relationship, the relationship with your client, can become a corrective and deeply healing opportunity for your client. What happens in between goal setting and strategizing and visioning, you know, all the things that happen in between, in other words, the relationship with the client, can be just as powerful and motivating and healing and transformative as the coaching itself. say that again. What happens in between what we usually think more traditionally of coaching, the visioning, the strategizing, questioning, you know, all of that, what happens in between, in other words, the relationship with the client, can be just as powerful and motivating and healing and transformative, even more so than the coaching itself. And so this brings up the next thing that you can do. So the reflecting of the truth, however you're going to do it, is a strategy that you'll use, you know, when you see the projection clearly in the container. But there are also things that you can preemptively do to bring healing dynamics and patterns into the container. We've already spoken about a lot through energetics and, you know, all of that, but I want to speak about some others specifically having to do with family dynamics. So one of my primary goals as a practitioner is to strive to be ideal mother, ideal father, and ideal sister or sibling as best as I can be. I'm going to say this again. One of my primary goals as a practitioner is to be ideal mother to my client, ideal father, ideal sister or sibling as best as I can be. As ideal mother, I show up as nurturing, all accepting, loving, validating, consistent. And all of this creates a corrective experience for the client. As ideal father, and, you know, by the way, I'm using genders here, but it's just, you know, if those gender or parent, I don't know, however you want to say it, like, don't, if it doesn't fall into those structures for you, you just look at it however you want. For me, in my mind, this is how I organize it. As ideal father, when I show up as ideal father, I allow for many mistakes. I motivate in positive ways. I hold structure and boundaries in warm ways. I see the highest potential of my clients. I get lovingly confrontational and bold when necessary, but always with respect. And all of this creates healing and a corrective experience. Now, in my first years as a practitioner, I actually was more hesitant to show up as ideal sister. And that was because of my own projections and stuff. I felt like it gave me less credit. As ideal sister, I don't put myself on a pedestal. I don't hold myself higher than my client. I hold an energy of there's enough success for everybody. There's enough for me, there's enough for you. I can have it, and you can have it. As ideal sister, I keep my own competition in check. I create an environment of full acceptance. I show that I really enjoy hanging out with my clients, that I really enjoy them and their company. I'm not just there because they're paying me, but I truly, like, appreciate who they are and enjoy it. And all of this creates a healing and corrective experience. And I'll share that, you know, where we are now at this point in the coaching and the transformational and the self-help industry, with all of the gurus out there, as practitioners, we also need to be very aware and very conscious of how we show up in the leader archetype. Because that's now a projection that people are bringing into coaching relationships and all of that, just because of how the industries have abused, leader industries have abused that role, right? So we have to be conscious of how we're showing up as a leader. I'm going to share a short story that some of you may have heard before, but I think will be helpful here. The very first time that I facilitated Into the Depth, which is my training program for facilitators. So to go deep into workshop facilitation, retreat facilitation, how to really work with groups as opposed to, you know, one-on-one. It was the first year that I taught this course, it was quite a number of years ago, and I led an ancestor ritual. It was just beautiful. It was on Halloween. We called in the ancestors. People had opportunity to speak to their loved ones that they had lost. It was really amazing. It was after a very long day. I won't get into all of the details. But at the end of that ritual, you know, we closed for the evening, and I went home. We were going to meet again starting the next morning. And I was like, I just felt like something was off. Like, I didn't close it the right way. I don't know. Something just felt incomplete to me. But I was really tired and went to bed, showed up at the retreat the next day, and we had a check-in in the morning. A check-in is like, you know, everybody had a minute or so to just check in to say where they're at. You know, we're sitting in circle, you know, what had come through the evening, what they're seeing, you know, all the things. And our check-in starts, and the first person goes, and she's like, I had a terrible night. I felt like my Aunt Gladys was in the room with me all night. It was really scary. You know, the next woman goes, and she's like, there was this weird light in the room all night. I felt like the ancestors were with me. You know, one, not everybody shared this, but like quite a few women in the room were just like, it was scary and I couldn't sleep and all these things. And about, you know, two or three women into the share, I just went to myself, oh shit, I forgot last night to tell the ancestors that they could go. I didn't release them from the circle. And I'm listening to each woman share, and it's just like, oh my gosh. It was beautiful how they all had supported each other through the night, roommates and all of that. But I was like really, you know, sitting there being like, ugh. Now, this has to do with the leader archetype that I was talking about. So I could have very easily in that situation abused the situation as the leader in the room. None of them realized that I didn't release the ancestors. I did. But I could have pretended like it was just normal for that to happen and how weird for them that that was happening and, you know, all the things, right? But I didn't. After everybody shared, I took a deep breath, pulled up my big girl panties, and I apologized, you know, from my heart, and I said, you know, I know why this is happening, and I explained that I had forgotten, you know, and it was embarrassing, right? It was like, it was a training on how to do ritual, and I had done the ritual, the end of the ritual, really wrong, but I shared, and I said, you know, but now I release them, and, you know, it's all good, they're not going to bother you anymore, you know, whatever the thing was. And it was one of the hardest and scariest things that I've ever had to do, not just as a leader, but as a human being. And I didn't know what their response was going to be. Like, I didn't know if they were like, give me my money back, you know, you suck, or, you know, whatever it is. But when I was done sharing, I looked around the circle, and There were women in the circle who were weeping. Just the tears were streaming down. And what they shared was that my taking responsibility and not abusing the power was so healing for them, because whether it was in their family or other groups that they had been in, the leader had taken power over and had not been honest, right? And so anyway, my point in all of this is that we have such opportunity as practitioners, as leaders, not just with the actual coaching tools that we use, the actual coaching strategies, but in how we show up and in those energetics and in those relationships. It just makes all the difference. So I want to encourage you to show up as, you know, however you want to name it, mother, father, parent, whatever it is, but ideal mother, ideal father, ideal sister, ideal sibling, ideal brother, ideal leader. I really want to encourage you to show up in those ways for your clients. So, and how do you do that? I'll just share a little bit in our last couple of minutes. So number one, the more that you can approach with an equal playing field, as we've looked at before, the easier that's going to be. The more that you can remain unattached, know that it's not about you, leave your ego out, then the easier it's going to be. The more that you can actively practice loving your client, loving, 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 the more you'll be able to show up in these ways. The more that you can stay grounded every day, right? When I show up and I'm not grounded in myself and I've got my own issues going on, it's really hard to show up as ideal mother for a client. The more that you do your own inner work, the more that you're willing to be bold with clients, the more that you can practice your creating awareness skills, all of these things. Okay. You've got some homework. I'll share it with you in a few minutes, but I know there's a lot here. I'd love to hear what questions you have for me, star two. And also, what are you taking away? And let's actually focus on that first. So first question for you is, of all the dynamics and projections that we looked at today, what's the top one for you? Just write it down and identify it. You're going to need that for your homework anyway. So what's the top dynamic for you that you see? And what are you really taking away from this call? Take a moment and jot that down. And then what questions do you have for me? You'll get a worksheet this week, and then in addition to that, I want you to start tracking family projections, whether it's with your coaching partner or with your clients. And I also want you to play with bringing ideal parent, ideal sibling, ideal leader into your partner work, into your coaching work. And really lean into it, play with it. All right, before we wrap for today, star two, what questions do you have or what are you taking away? I'd love to hear from one or two of you. I know we're just about at time. Stephanie.
Hi, yeah, so I'm sort of wondering, like, what the next step is when we notice this and create awareness around it. So, for example, I'm thinking of one of my clients who I've definitely noticed this pattern of her praising me a lot during the coaching session of, like, I'll say something and she's like, oh, wow, that's such a good question. Or, like, sometimes when I ask her for celebrations, she'll celebrate the fact that I'm helping her so much.
Yeah.
So what I've been thinking of, like, how could I broach this with her is along the lines of what you said, and this is assuming that I know what's going on, say something right. like, I'm sensing that sometimes you minimize your own accomplishments and put others on a pedestal and praise them and then ask, what relationship does this remind you of?
Mm-hmm.
So my first question is, like, am I on the right track there? But then my bigger question is, like, and then what? Like, if she says, oh, yeah, yeah. I do this all the time with blah, 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 yeah. what do I do after that?
Great. Yeah, so yes, you're on the right track. And then once you create that first piece of awareness, then from there, you're going to want to explore it a little bit more so she can really understand how she uses it, why she uses it, and start to see why it would be of a benefit to her to poke holes, more holes in it. So you might ask some questions like, you know, how does it serve you to put other people on a pedestal? What does it do for you? And then you might ask a question like, you know, how does it hold you back? Or in what ways does it block you mm-hmm. when you put others on a pedestal?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, again, like, you have to see where the conversation goes. But then from there, say, you know, hopefully she'll see the ways that it blocks her and what's actually going on and, you know, all of that. And then from there, you can say, so, you know, when you're putting other people on a pedestal, what's your inner voice? You know, what's the belief there
mm-hmm.
for you? And then you can lead her to say, what would a better belief be for you? And then I would add an action to that. And the action may just start in the relationship itself. Like, you may say, like, if it's okay with you, I want to step up your celebration. So, like, if she usually does three, I'd say, like, for the next few weeks, I want you to do 6 celebrations a week, and they are not allowed to be about anyone but you.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's very helpful. My other curiosity about this is, like, when is it an appropriate time to do this? Like, it seems like this could be sort of like an interruption into whatever conversation is happening or the goals for that session.
Mm-hmm.
So do I bring this up if I feel like it's conflicting with their goals or getting in the way, or, like, I guess when?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's situation by situation. Sometimes you're going to want to bring it up in the moment if in that moment it is, like, glaringly blocking the progress of the call, because it's just, like, a ripe moment to do it in.
Yeah.
In a situation like you described where it's putting on the pedestal, my sense is there's not going to be that glaring moment.
Yeah.
So I would do it at the beginning of a call before you start to get into the meat of something.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you
so
much.
Great questions. Yeah. You're welcome. Okay. Michelle.
Hey there. Thank you so much. I thought a little bit more about what I was trying to ask, and I really feel like what I wanted to say, or, you know, what was coming up was a little bit more. It's more like, you know, a family dynamic and a history in my world of, you know, the fixer.
Mm-hmm.
People come to me, I fix things. So in my role as a coach consultant, really, when I'm going from the consultant role back to coach, you know, and sort of that dance back and forth, I think that's where, like, I'm really struggling with how do I do that in a way that doesn't come across as being like, I'm going to fix it, or I'm the one that can fix it, because I'm not. I have advice, I have wisdom, I have things I can share, but I'm in that. Like, I have a client I'm struggling with around that right now.
Can you give me some more details on that particular client? I think that will be
helpful. She's in a situation with some of the people that she works with that really is, you know, toxically, and it's environmentally toxic. They're abusive. They, you know, love to catch her in a mistake versus supporting her and doing the work that she's doing for them. And, you know, the things that, I've suggested that she do around that, while she's doing some of them, and I feel like that's a start, but I would love to see her sever that relationship entirely because it's not beneficial to her, but I don't want to save her. I don't want to fix it for her. I want her to come to this answer herself.
Got it.
And we're close, but okay.
Okay, so yeah, so the consulting part, right, the more like overt, you know, we can call it fixing, but consulting isn't really fixing, it's just sharing your wisdom, really, is more like, this is what you can do in this situation when your boss does this, or I really feel, or like to flat out say, like, it really feels like this job isn't serving you, you can tell me, but it feels like it makes the most sense to leave, right? So that's we can call that more consulting, but I would really call those creating awareness pieces, you know, with a hint of consulting, honestly. But from there then, Michelle, like you said, like if she doesn't, right, if you really want her to sever and she doesn't, then there's a couple of pieces. Number one, you got to check your own filters, right? And after you do, if you're like, no, this isn't the fixer part of me, this is really like, I know that this is what she wants for herself, then you go into more of the, you know, either befriend the fear process where, you know, you see if she's willing to look at what is the fear that's coming up. If she were to sever the relationship, or, you know, when we get to, like, rewiring negative thought patterns, you might do it through, like, belief system. But that's when, right, so you can't do it for her, but you can hold space for her to, like, untangle the fears and the beliefs and the resistances that are holding her back. Am I answering your question? I might not be. Tell me.
No, it was very helpful, and it, you know, it opened up a little bit more. I think my fear around this is, you know, sort of doing it the wrong or way, or me bringing in, you know, well, let me tell you what to do versus let me help you decide what to do.
Yeah. So think back to our creating awareness module. A good way to, like, a good strategy for that is, I don't think this is just me, but let me know if you don't agree. What I really see is in your highest tier is to sever the relationship. How does that land for you? You know best. I could be wrong. How does it land for you?
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good. All right, and I think we have time. We've got one more hand raised. I'm going to take it. I think this is April.
Hey, it is April.
Hi.
Hi there. Just the observation of how much my mother comes through,
mm-hmm.
like all these things.
Yeah.
And I've been struggling with my mom as of recently because she's just in such a miserable place that I just don't even want to see her. And I think of her cynicism and indifference, and it was always a matter of get your shit together and just do what you got to do. Suck it up, buttercup. So I have an underlying feeling that comes through, and I sure hope I don't project it, but I feel like sometimes I feel those feelings like, why can't you see this? Like the client, you don't see this part. But I see it, and
mm-hmm.
I have to be careful of my words. And I feel like I need to really be aware of being gentle and or, like, hold back a part because I don't want to come out sounding like my mother.
Yeah. I think that's a good awareness to have. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a really good awareness to have, right?
And
go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not realizing that I have a tone of voice. My sister has it too. We have a tone of voice that comes out at times that is like slicing to the bone for others, but for us, yeah. it's just the
it's
blunt
just every day.
Of yeah. the truth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm not right. So how do I know? Like, I guess if somebody flinches, you know that you've crossed a line. But it just made me become even more uber aware of like, oh wow, I wonder if I'm cutting in any way, or.
So I think just
again,
awareness alone is going to, it's going to help you know if it's going to be cutting or not.
Mm.
It's
mm-hmm.
when it's in your blind spot and you're not aware of it is where it has the potential to be cutting or whatever it is. But if you're aware, April, what is actually, and I didn't mention this in the body of the call and I should, I meant to, but I didn't get around to it, is like, when we're aware, we can actually sometimes use the projections for good or use the dynamics for good.
Mm.
So, like, I have seen you, because I've been in the room with you, use the cutting voice, but you've used it masterfully and on purpose.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? So then it's not just like by accident and oops. But then in the every now and again, there's a moment when maybe a little bit of the slice, right, is going to just hit the spot, and you can use it skillfully.
This is good to know, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I guess maybe when I see my sister, she's not aware of it.
Yeah.
And it feels hurtful.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, because when it's unaware, then it kind of can cause damage, right? In accidental or non-accidental ways. It's similar to shadow, right? But like, because the more that you're aware of it, then you can know how to use it or modulate it.
Yeah, okay. Feeling better.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody. Please share more, any other takeaways, any other questions that come forward. Happy to answer. Enjoy your homework, and I'll see you guys soon. Bye.